Welcome to Modern Digital Applications, a podcast for corporate decision makers and executives looking to create or extend their digital business with the help of modern applications, processes, and software strategy. Now, welcome your host, a recognized industry thought leader in cloud computing and published author, bringing over 30 years of experience, Lee Acheson.
My guest today is Thomas Curran. Thomas is a cloud executive with many years of experience, including VP of Technology and Innovation at Deutsche Telekom and Technology Advisor at Deutsche Börse. He's the co-founder of the Ori Software Foundation, which is the owner of a very popular open source Go-based identity management library named Kratos, along with other open source identity management tools. Now Thomas is co-founder of Ori Corp, an open source identity infrastructure and services company. Thomas is with me today from his office in Munich, Germany, to talk about application identity management. As means of full disclosure, I've worked with Thomas personally for many years, first meeting him back when he was at Deutsche Börse. I'm now currently working directly with Thomas at Ori, architecting their new cloud infrastructure.
And now our main story on modern digital applications.
Thomas, welcome, and thank you for joining me today.
Thank you, Lee. Thank you for that nice introduction as well.
So it's interesting times for us to be here. And what's it like in Germany right now? You've just began a new lockdown, haven't you?
It's called a soft lockdown, started today. And the way this works in Germany right now is that I think this is sort of running up to wanting to have Christmas open. And therefore, the government decided to have all of the restaurants and basically any place where you could be entertained in groups of people closed. That's what's called a soft lockdown. But there are a number of other businesses affected, basically type of places where you could go for leisure. So it's 1 month and with about 20,000 people infected a day in Germany, that was the decision the government made to close things down. So it will be a quiet month for people that love to go out, and people that love to stay home and program like me have no problem with this.
So are you in Munich now or are you in Frankfurt?
No, I'm in Berlin right now.
Are you in Berlin right now? Okay, yeah. Okay. So are you going to stay there or are you going to be able to move back and forth to Munich still?
I have to go to Munich on the train this week because we are just closing a lease on our first office. I'm part of that whole process of looking at things and making sure it's going well.
Got it. I imagine trains in Germany are a little bit easier than airplanes around the world to travel in right now. But
well, the big thing in Germany this last week was the opening of the Berlin International Airport. That was only about 8 years late and I think 4 billion euros. So I would love to fly just to be able to see the airport. But frankly, getting on an airplane is quite scary, I think, right now. So I'll be on the train and the trains are running. It's, you know, you have to have a mask on the entire time. You know, they're not very full. So it's at least a little bit comfortable.
Yeah, I'm actually looking forward to seeing the new airport too. I've flown into Berlin a number of times and absolutely hated the old airport, but I'm looking forward to seeing the new one at some point in the future anyway.
Berlin Tegel has some sentimental value for sure, but it's way too small for the size of the city with 5 million people.
Exactly. Well, we're actually here to talk about identity. And I'd like to start out by asking you, what do you mean by identity? What is identity, application identity?
Right. So identity is, of course, a term that has many connotations around, you know, how you represent a person, especially in the offline world, passport or an ID card, etc. Identity is a term we use to describe the technology and data that is used to describe specific services that are used to communicate between computer applications in the cloud. Now, of course, there are many, many other dimensions of identity, everything from cryptocurrency, wallets, and all kinds of other things. I think the main thing that I would like to talk about in terms of identity are the technologies and data that are used to identify and describe services that communicate between applications in the cloud.
So is this mostly computer to computer, or do you also deal with human to computer?
Human to computer is a big part of that, because usually humans want to have a way of participating in some transactions, e-commerce. Almost every software application that's online requires you to identify yourself. And by doing that, you create a credential. A credential is one way creating an identity about something or someone. That something could be a car, it could be an alarm system in your home, it could be some Internet of Things application, a drone. But in some sense, it needs a credential to exhibit its identity. And that identity is usually some type of encrypted information that usually includes some user ID and some type of a password or other way, a biological way or another machine signature that create an identity.
What do you mean by biological?
For instance, on your iPhone, face recognition would be one example. If you have a MacBook or an older iPhone, your fingerprint could be an example of that. So these are so-called biometrics or biological-based ways of describing a person. In many cases, they can be converted into a piece of encrypted information about your identity. At least Apple users, to understand that, is when your computer talks about a keychain. This is a collection of information that's encrypted in some way, but that can be added together to create a unique identifier for either the person or the machine using the machine.
So it's actually a lot more than just username and password. It's an identity in some way of proving that that identity is who they say they are.
Yeah, and as I said, for simplicity's sake, a lot of people tend to think of their username and password as their unique identifier. But of course, as we all know, this is a very, very broad field now, with people forgetting passwords and, of course, companies talking about things like second factors. And these are all ways to strengthen that equation of identity by just adding variables to it. So you combine a username, password, fingerprint, facial recognition, retina scan, and, you know, soon probably we'll have chips installed in our arms that we just use to submit information. I think all of this is on the horizon, because username, password as a combination has proven to be quite faulty. The elements or the variables in that equation are fairly easy to steal or replicate. Now, you know, if you go back to the early days when the Department of Defense first, it's called a Rainbow series, a series of books that the DoD wrote to help understand some of the basics of credentials and cryptology. You know, if you go back to that, I think it was probably in the early 80s, maybe late 70s, you see that we haven't really changed much since then. The one thing that has changed, there was a built-in sense, and it's very obvious when you go back and look at those books, that a lot of emphasis is put on the user as having the sort of authority, but also the responsibility to protect the information that he's using to identify himself. And, you know, more and more the trend around identity for machines and for humans is to somehow shift that responsibility from the person to, you know, more software-based, make it less likely that the person would be able to make mistakes and misuse the information that he was asked to keep confidential.
So the responsibility for keeping that information safe, instead of being from the person who owns the information, it's for the thing that's consuming the information. Well, let's go on a little bit here. You hear the phrase anonymous internet, and can you tell me what that means to you and how identity fits into the concept?
So in the early days of the internet, which was the ARPANET, there wasn't a sense that everything had to be identified on services. And I think most of that related to the way people thought about the communication infrastructure that was emerging as being something that was very loosely coupled and didn't really have a sense that each and every service would need to be identified. Now, of course, there's some goodness in that and there's some badness in that. The concept of being anonymous is not really absolutely correct. In other words, you obviously need to have some identifier in order to participate in communication. But that identifier, and that's again going back to the very origins of how the internet was conceived, it's not, you know, record checked by someone in as it would be like a bank account. So for practical purposes, you could make up Bugs Bunny and, you know, be Bugs Bunny on the internet. And it's not easy to figure out, you know, who you might be. Now, that's gotten a little bit harder over the years. But again, the sense that you can create a version of something you want to be, or you could try to be as anonymous as possible. And by anonymous, I mean, no one would know your real name or anything about you that's physically related. And you can create this personality that made it extremely attractive for people. It was easy to get on the internet. There wasn't really a lot of infrastructure about tracking things down and figuring out who people were. And that over time, of course, became necessary. But in the beginning, it wasn't like that. So anonymous is something that is very much, I think, part and parcel of how the internet was conceived. Now, somewhere over time, anonymous became an issue for many reasons. I'm just going to point to China as an example of a country that reacted to that in a very different way than Western Europe or the United States did. And so in the sense of having a non-anonymous internet, you need to do a certain amount of data verification to participate in a bigger social forum that the internet's using. You know, many people feel like they need to be anonymous for reasons of privacy and protecting their personal information in some ways. So I think there are, though, now many signs that the anonymous internet is on track to become history. Of course, you have many rules now, regulations, GDPR being one of them, and also the combination of things that you would need to identify yourself make it more difficult to be completely anonymous.
And now when we talk about, you know, traditional identity, like, you know, username and password based identity, even some of the biometric identity, we're also not really talking about identifying who you are, but identifying that you are the same person. In other words, you know, I have a Facebook account and I have a username password with Facebook, and only I know that username password. So when I log into Facebook, it knows that it's me that's logging in. But that doesn't mean that Facebook knows it's Lee Atchison. It just knows that it's me and doesn't necessarily know anything about me unless I tell it. So I could still remain anonymous from some respects, even though I'm identified.
I think there's soft steps towards some goal. In the case of Facebook, there's no regulation that would require them to verify that you are who you say you are. That's why Facebook has come under quite a lot of attack about censorship, etc. Because in order to censor something, you have to be able to trace it back to somebody or something. On the other hand, if you know, take the example of your bank, they also know you have a password and a username, but they also probably know a little bit more about you. You had to show a utility bill and maybe a social security number and some other things, because there is a deeper regulation around the necessity and the responsibility to verify your personal information. That's a whole body of law called Know Your Customer. There are many other things that can be used to, let's just say, triangulate. This is a person that has an IP address that's in this property that seems to be owned by Lee Allen Atchison and his wife, and perhaps it's either him or her. And well, she's on her iPhone and happens to be in Portland, Oregon, so it can't be her. These are, again, Facebook has, I think the recent estimate I read was 36,000 data points that they collect. So in some sense, the few things that you feel like you've given them are just dropping salt in the sea of information that they really have. So that's where I think we also shouldn't be fooled by this sense of anonymous as a term that people can feel safe behind. Easy for you to say yes to your WhatsApp terms of and service agreement, but lo and behold, you've just said yes to collecting everything about every movement you make with your device. And that data is, at least in the United States, shared with Facebook. So if you have a similar account in Facebook, then that data can be used for other ways. So let's just say there are many ways to find out who you are, even if you feel anonymous.
I think everyone has gone to a website and then went on to Facebook and suddenly saw familiar ads and wondered where those ads came from. And this is the sort of thing you're talking about, where they collect all this information to figure out you or aspects about you in order to, in the case of Facebook, target you with the advertising, but other websites that do this too, in order to determine who you are and what information they need about you in order to fulfill whatever business goals they have.
Right. So these things are called tracking cookies, and they're used in almost the same as session cookies in internet communication. So on your device, there's in a web browser, there's a let's just call it, for simplification, it's a database, a small database of information about what they know about you. In other words, what sites you came from, what you've typed in, how long you might look at a certain site, and then that information is used. It's actually sold then to advertisers in real-time advertising platforms.
Stay tuned for the next episode of Modern Digital Applications, where I continue with part two of my interview with Thomas.
Thank you for listening to Modern Digital Applications with Lee Atchison. Lee helps executives keep up with industry trends and best practices in cloud computing, application scaling, DevOps, and applications modernization in order to stay in front of disruptive influencers. Subscribe to this podcast to ensure you get each new episode as it's available. Visit mdacast.com for all the resources and publications from Lee and his team. Thank you for tuning in to today's show.